This is lecture 23.
The last time we were together, we established that the coherent state matrix element of the evolution operator giving us the propagator in the coherent state representation had a formal representation that looked like this. Where each PQ is determined from the Hamiltonian operator by this diagonal expectation value. The difference between this expression and what we had before is several fold. On the one hand, the symbol representing the classical Hamiltonian is qualitatively different than we had before, defined in a different way. But far more important was the physical meaning of the variables P and Q. P and Q were not sharp eigenvalues of capital Q or capital P. They were instead expectation values of capital P and capital Q in the particular coherent states. So there was no crime committed with regard to the Heisenberg uncertainty principle if we gave them simultaneously together. Moreover, you should have recognized from our construction that there were the same number of P's and Q's in this integral as opposed to what we have seen previously. In particular, if we recall that this propagator was called by this name, and we fold it together with a second propagator to go from an original time T0 to an intermediate time S to a final time capital T by means of integrating over the intermediate phase space values, and that gives us the propagator from the beginning to the full end from 0 to T. And our trick before was to count the number of P's and Q's in the following way. We said the number of P's minus the number of Q's is equal to M for a propagator. So here, there's an M here. There's another M, so that's 2M. And we take away, or we add rather, plus 1 for the P integration and minus 1 for the Q. So that's a net of 0 that we add to that. And that's equal to M on the right-hand side. And the only solution to this equation is that M equals 0. So the number of P's equals the number of Q's, which makes it much more compatible with the Liouville measure, which it formally looks like, than we had previously seen.
Question.
We fix Q and P at both end points.
We fix Q and P at both end points.
That's correct.
So the Q, well, the P at this point, P of 0 is P prime. Q of 0 equals Q prime. P of capital T equals P double prime, Q at capital T equals Q double prime.
It may seem strange, but it is not inconsistent.
The next thing we did last time was to look at the Weyl operator, K
Q minus XP all up in the exponent divided by H bar, I H bar. Made a superposition of that over variables X and K with some function we called H tilde W XK to build an operator integrating over the coordinates X, X and K itself. And we found that this diagonal matrix element here, HP of Q, when itself passed into Fourier transform language so that the P was replaced by X, the Q replaced by K, was related to this term in the integrand, XK, by the multiplicative factor X squared plus K squared up in the exponent. And so once we know this associated with our particular operator, we can immediately construct the diagonal matrix element, or we can use the following information, that the diagonal matrix element itself surely determines its own Fourier transform. Therefore, it determines this weight function uniquely because this factor never vanishes. Therefore, if we know this factor, we know the full Hamiltonian operator. In other words, the diagonal matrix elements fully determine the operator, hence they would determine the off-diagonal elements. I want to start today talking about yet another symbol called the diagonal representation of operators. We've had this on the board before. Now we're going to study it a little bit more in depth. We take our standard projection operator onto the PQI coherent state projection operator. We give it a weight this time. I'm going to use a small h of argument PQ, and that will be a construction of an operator. This is an alternative way to build an operator, and we're associating this by this formula a different symbol. Symbol, the word symbol means C number phase space function associated with an operator. This is a C number phase space function associated with an operator H. This is a C number phase space function associated with an operator H, and they are generally different. We will briefly, after we introduce this, we're going to talk a bit about nomenclature. These things have names, and we'll give you a review on that.
So that is any operator H?
In particular case, we can get any operator we like this way. Let's just double check that. I'm going to change my integration variables now to prime, so I put P prime, Q prime, Q prime, Q prime. And then take the diagonal matrix element of this Hamiltonian. I call it Hamiltonian. It can be any operator you like. H of PQ. That is equal to the diagonal weight function representative. And then I have PQ interproduct with P prime, Q prime, absolute squared kernel. Integrate dP prime, dQ prime over 2 pi h bar. We know what this overlap function is as an e to the I a phase factor and a damping factor. The phase factor will disappear here. And this thing becomes after I square it 1 over 2 h bar p minus p prime squared plus q minus q prime squared and h of p prime q prime equal H of PQ. What we have now is a bona fide convolution expression. Convolution in one space becomes multiplication in the Fourier space. So if I take the Fourier transform of both sides of that, I will come back again to the Fourier transform variable that I dealt with just a moment ago. Here, H tilde, capital H tilde of X and K, that is related
to the quantities of interest to the Fourier transform of our diagonal weight function, xk, and the Fourier transform of this. This happens to be one of those elegant functions which is identical under Fourier transformation. 1 over 2h bar, e to the minus 1 over 2h bar, x squared plus k squared. This formula looks very much like this formula. And the only difference is there's a 1 quarter here, here, and there's a 1 half up there. So these two things are technically distinct. But nevertheless, it tells you that if you know the diagonal matrix element, which you do, then you Fourier transform, you know that. Put this in the proper place, and that means you can determine the Fourier transform with this weight function. So it's a unique prescription. You can get any operator constructed in that way. And we're going to be using that alternative symbol in just a moment. So let's have a brief moment on like a summary of some of the concepts and nomenclature. So, we have first off our diagonal matrix element. I will continue to use the symbol H. I will probably continue to call it a Hamiltonian. It's a general operator. Don't worry about that. H of PQ has PQ H PQ. What is the association of this function with this operator? Well, if I take an operator of the form summation AMN Q minus IP to power M Q plus IP to power N, that is so-called normal ordered for this with respect to our fiducial vector, PQ, then that expectation value is simply sum AMN Q minus IP little Q minus I little P M little Q plus I little P power M. So this is a one-to-one transcription for selected form of polynomials, and you could take linear combinations of that to get a very large class of quantities. It has names. This is called the Husini representation, after a Japanese gentleman who worked with these kind of states and took diagonal matrix elements. My recollection is somewhere in the 1940s, to be honest with you. It's also called the Q representation, notation introduced by Glauber. It's called the diagonal matrix element form. And it's called the lower symbol by the majority of people. Yes, question?
Is that raised to m cubed? Why are you summing over m and n?
I'm summing on m and n in both terms. Is that the question?
Yeah, so it's not raised to m, right?
This is raised to power m, raised to power n. This is raised to power m, this is raised to power n. So that's a very general polynomial. Okay, lower symbol. Now, it is regrettable. This name has caught on. And it's a regrettable conflict in terminology that I used to call this the upper symbol. Now, I have switched my name slightly to call it the uppercase symbol because it uses a capital letter. And that way, I try to be at least included in the family of normal names. The other symbol of interest to us is the new one we've emphasized again today. So that had a number one soon.
Yeah.
This is the diagonal representation. H equal integral of a weighted family of projection operators dp dq 2 of pi h bar. And there is a similar kind of series here, representation for H and the symbol capital H. There, here's a similar thing for over here for the symbol of small h. And that's going to look as follows. If I have a sum of A, M, N again, M and N, the same kind of quantities, Q plus IP, I put it on this side this time, M Q minus IP. Maybe I should even put the indices the same. That would make the thing look pretty much the same. So what I've done is I've interchanged the order of M and N. It's still Q minus IP to the power M, however, as it is over here. P comma Q, projection operator. Integrate dp dq divided by 2h bar. That makes an operator. And that operator is given by sum a, m, n, m and n, q plus ip on this on the left this side, q minus ip on power m on the right-hand side. So what is different is that the order of the operators have been interchanged. Plus sign q plus ip was to the right before. Now the q plus ip is to the left. So whereas that was normal ordering, this is anti-normal ordering. So this has a name as well. This quantity H does not have any historical name like Husemi's. This is called the P representation. Terminology introduced again by Glauber. It's called the upper symbol by most of the workers. And of course, I used to call that the lower symbol. And now I call it the lowercase symbol because that's not a capital letter, but a lowercase letter.
Any idea what his reasoning for name that
nomenclature? Say again?
Any idea of what his reasoning for the nomenclature was? Glauber's.
Any argument of why the nomenclature was so? Yes, okay. I have a good reason. I have a pretty good understanding of that, but that takes us way off the subject. I'm happy to talk about that privately with you. Okay, now, having brought these two symbols to our attention, the only case they actually coincide with one another is for the unit operator. If the A's are all, if all the only term that sums is M and N equal to zero, then the ordering did not matter. I guess it would seem to be that any M equals zero situation would also work. My goodness, I never thought of that before. So Q plus IP to the power N would seem to work in both cases. So the symbols would be the same for pure annihilation operators or for pure creation operators. Okay. What I want to turn down to is an alternative coherent state phase space path integral. The previous example we had, and the one we derived probably in the last two lectures, is from 1960 and was done by myself. What I'm going to talk about now
comes from the period of 1970, and it was done by three individuals rather independently, Berzin, Lieb, and Onofre. And the argument derivation for that goes as follows. In a certain way, this is a kind of acuter representation than the one that came from 1960. We know that we can represent the Hamiltonian operator by means of this diagonal representation. Superposition of one-dimensional projection operators. We know we can also represent the identity operator. If instead of H there, I would put the number 1. I'm now going to combine these two terms as follows, by putting a minus I epsilon H over minus I epsilon over H bar in front of that. And this is an identity. I'm now going to change that identity and make an approximation. I'm going to say that this one is approximately for small epsilon given by e to the minus script h over little h bar. And this one is given by e to the minus I epsilon h bar h of pq. Pq projection operator dpdq 2 by h bar. And there is an error to be made of order epsilon squared. One simple remark, that if this operator is Hermitian, then I take the Hermitian adjoint of the right-hand side, and I see that the projection operator stays the same, so this function is real. HPQ equals its complex conjugate, therefore being real, is the same as H being Hermitian or self-adjoint. All right, so we'll use that fact. We have now have a real term upstairs times an I, so that's a pure phase vector up there. I'm going to use the fact that e to the minus I capital T H bar, the T over H bar times the Hamiltonian is nothing but a product of factors of this type, e to the minus I epsilon script h over h bar. And I will take capital N of those this time. So N times epsilon will equal my capital T. Next thing I do is I take matrix elements of that to build my propagator. That will be matrix elements of this expression, one on the far left and one on the far right. And then I'm going to substitute this term here for e to the minus I epsilon operator h divided by h bar as this integral for each one of those. That's going to give me an awful lot of product of overlaps between things. And what I get out of that is the following. Product L equals 0 to capital N, PL plus 1, QL plus 1, PL, QL. I take care of all the overlaps. This C number function stands quite on the outside by itself. That's the product over here, L equals 1 to capital N, e to the minus I epsilon little h of PL of QL divided by h bar times dPL dQL divided by 2 pi h bar. Now, of course, I have this error term here. The error term has gone from order epsilon squared now to order epsilon. And to fix that, I will take a limit in front, limit epsilon to 0, n to infinity, such that capital N times epsilon. Let's put in what we know for this representation of the overlap of the coherence states. epsilon to 0, n to infinity, n epsilon equals t. That's equal then to e to the I over h, well, okay, I like the part, summation from 0 to capital N. There's a phase factor, PL plus 1 plus PL, divide by 2, QL plus 1 minus QL. Looks like our Stratonovich prescription. Then we have another term here, 1 over 4 h bar, summation from 0 to N, PL plus 1 minus PL squared plus QL plus 1 minus QL quantity squared. That takes care of the contribution of this overlap. Now we have this term, which is minus I epsilon summation from 1 to N of H, little h of PL, QL, divided by H bar. Finally, our product over our separate measures, dPL and QL, divided by 2H bar, our product all the way from 1 to capital N. This is an elegant formula. A pure phase factor here and here, and a pure damping factor from here. And I didn't have to keep things on the basic baseline to give you a best formula. This is already a best formula written here. There's a perfect integrability of this expression. However, let's see what happens when I interchange all these limits with this integral and write, as I am customarily going to do, the expression it assumes for continuous and differentiable paths. Of course, there are no continuous and differentiable paths, but I put that down as a code for how things go. That becomes PQ dot. This part goes away. That's dP squared. For Brownian motion, that would not be zero. That's dT. dP, that's one of the Itoh rules. If this was a true Brownian motion, this would be dT. And in fact, times the factor nu, we'll soon do that, the diffusion constant. But for continuous and differentiable paths, I divide by epsilon squared to get kinetic energy here, multiply by epsilon squared. One of those epsilons is dt. The other epsilon is a coefficient, which goes to zero, which makes this term not contribute. So that's not there at all. And what's next here is h of p of t, q of t, end of that integral dt, then I have my curly dp, curly dq. And for my 1 over 2 pi h bars, I put in my standard script m in front. This formula represents this propagator. I hope it's still on the board. That very same formula represents this propagator, except the symbols are different. This is capital H, that's lowercase h. And they are not the same. They depend on h bar in different ways. How can that formula and this formula both be true? Neither of them are true. This is a formal expression. Don't take it seriously. This is what you should take seriously. And this lattice approximation is different than the lattice approximation we gave for this formula over here based on using the capital H. So there's no conflict at all. But once again, we have obtained a very elegant
phase factor. It was the same formula except the second part. The damping term was not there, right?
No, we never were able to get our Hamiltonian in such an elegant form. I remind you of how the Hamiltonian looked over here for our previous formula. In the lattice expression, that became e to the minus I epsilon p
PL plus 1, QL plus 1, H, PL, QL, divided by PL plus 1, QL plus 1, PL, QL, summation.
That's what our lattice expression had to be in order to use this symbol. And this symbol is not necessarily even real. This quotient is not necessarily real. Take the complex conjugate, it will look differently. Over here, we have a pure phase vector.
Listen.
Yes, sir.
What happens if L equal to M over there?
L equal to?
M, since you fixed P and Q at the last point also.
So the question is, what happens to L equal N?
Yeah, should that be there, or should it be L equal to 1 to N minus 1?
Here or here?
The last one, where you put DP, DQ over 2 minus 1.
This one. Well, let's see, I have PN plus 1, and QN plus 1, as usual, are P double and Q double. And I have P0 and Q0 equal to P prime and Q prime. Those are the values which label the coherent states that are kept fixed. They only appear in this term and this term. They do not appear here, nor are they part of the integration. Does that help? Or you still have a question left?
I guess you already integrated out dp and dqn, right? Like you wrote on this.
Not at all. They're still here. One of the L equal to N is still here. That's one of the integration variables to be used here. It's also associated with the Qn plus 1, which would be the final Q double, and then there's Qn, the variable still to be integrated over.
Okay.
So there is a similarity in these two expressions, which is, again, worth noting, and that is, the P and Q denote mean values. So if I plot Q as a function of time, to go from Q prime and Q double prime, I have a path that looks like that. Over here, P prime to P double prime, I have a path that looks like that. But these points are the mean values. If I now talk about particles, and I want to think of the particle that is making that path, I have to be a little more careful. I have to look at the not only the mean value in the coherent states, but I want to look at the variance within the coherent states. And we've already seen what this quantity is. Bringing the PQs together through here, the unitaries, that just cancels that P. That's equal to O P squared O. And for our oscillator situation, that is H bar over 2 times omega, if we had an omega carried along. Likewise, for the Q situation, Q minus Q squared to find the variance of the particle's trajectory, that would give me a h bar over 2 and a divide by an omega, and the product of those two, as we already indicated previously, is simply h bar over 2 saturating Heisenberg's inequality. So what is actually happening is, from a particle point of view, there is a little width to this, given by this variance question, or perhaps the square root of that, the standard deviation. But the center of this line is well-defined and is the trajectory of the mean path of the particle. Don't forget, we didn't have anything like this previously, because we always talked about sharp P, then sharp Q, sharp P, then sharp Q, and absolutely epicycle point of view, epicyclian point of view of things. You have now begun to arrive at the modern era where Galileo, Newton have entered the story and have a much better physical description, which I believe actually gives you a much better mathematical statement as well. Questions on this?
Yeah.
I see a few puzzled faces. Puzzled face? No puzzled face. Very good. Okay. Okay.
Now we have a major dilemma.
I'm going to point to it now.
I'll point to it again. Major dilemmas like the budget deficit should be pointed out every day, for example. And that is, what does H of PQ mean?
In particular, we've talked about
canonical coordinate transformations previously. They are related, as you remember, PDQ is equal to P bar DQ bar plus a possible generating function here. That transformation, under such a transformation, the Hamiltonian function changes functional form and its different dependence on the coordinates. And if I give you a random Hamiltonian, such as P bar, and ask you, to what physical system does this mathematical expression refer to, you have no idea. We need a handle, some way to keep track of the physics of the problem. Canonical coordinates, as practiced in classical theory, where we have a symplectic manifold, a manifold with a symplectic form, are inadequate to keep track of what is the physics. Let me just remind you a little more, one time again, about classical phase space. Classical phase space is a manifold. We're going to talk primarily about 1P and 1Q, so that's a two-dimensional space. I will talk in a moment about larger dimensions, but for the moment it's a manifold. There is a symplectic form. That's all there is to it. And this symplectic form is non-degenerate and it is closed. That's the rule of the game. We know we can introduce coordinates so that omega is equal to dp wedge dq. Any form for omega that looks like that is called canonical coordinates. And the exterior derivative of this being zero is an automatic consequence of this expression because d squared on anything is zero. What happens in higher dimensions? Let's briefly talk about higher dimensions. It's going to be an even dimensional space. We'll make it 2n. We'll let x be the name of the variable, x, j, where j equals 1 all the way up to 2n. It's going to cover the p's and the q's both. There will be n p's and n q's, but for the moment I don't do that. So I have a 2n dimensional manifold, and I put on a symplectic form, and the general expression for that symplectic form is given as follows. It is an anti-symmetric tensor, omega sub jk, depending on the coordinates x, times dx j wedge dx k, and I'll put a half in front of that so I can eliminate the double summation. Now, how many coordinates are there? There's 2n. How many components in a 2n by 2n anti-symmetric matrix? That should be 2n times 2n minus 1 all divided by 2. So there's that many, this many independent components in this matrix, and I have 2n coordinates to deal with. Obviously, as n gets big, n squared will dominate over this n. This thing will become large compared to that. But there's a miracle. A miracle is Darboux's theorem. Bergman's theorem says that in any dimensions, I'll put a summation down here just to, just for the moment. And Darboux's theorem says you can always find coordinates, non-singular coordinate transformation from the x's to something else, so that omega can be brought into the form of a strictly anisymmetric matrix with numerical coefficients 1 and 0. That means that omega can always be brought into the form summation dpj wedge dqj. I don't know which one I want, Q upstairs and P, it doesn't matter. It can be brought into this form. This is Darboux's theorem. That's a rather startling fact. I have n coordinates to change, but I can reshuffle a larger number of functions to bring them into particular forms of zeros and ones. Okay. So by, and these are all called canonical coordinates over here. So if I express my situation in a large, or even in a two-dimensional situation, or a large number of dimensions, I cannot rely on canonical coordinates for the symplectic form to give me a clue about the physics of what's going on, because they are fundamentally the same. In a different set of canonical coordinates, they look the same. Whereas we know this P bar could represent a harmonic oscillator, could represent an anharmonic oscillator, even though it doesn't look like one. You should know that. You know that. Okay. We cannot get help from the symplectic form. But Mother Nature is kind. Mother Nature offers us another tool to give us help. We're going to introduce the shadow metric. Classical mechanics does not put a metric on faces. It doesn't need to. It doesn't work with a metric on faces. We're going to add a metric on our phase space manifold. Riemannian metric. It doesn't belong in classical mechanics. How am I going to use it? I'm going to keep it in my pocket. Here it is. I pull it out and I look at the form of the metric. And I'm going to show you that the form of the metric will tell me the physical meaning of certain otherwise purely mathematical expressions. Let's take a metric on phase space. You're normally used to ds squared. ds squared belongs to configuration space. Three dimensions, x, y, and z, or perhaps four dimensions when you add time into that. I'm going away from space and time. I'm using a metric on space and momentum. So instead of s's, I'm going to use sigmas. Anyway, one of our favorite choices has been this form of the metric. This is a set of Cartesian coordinates. And Cartesian coordinates exist in only one and only one kind of space, a Euclidean or a flat space. They imply a flat space. Conversely, if I have a flat space, I can always move around and introduce Cartesian coordinates. I am going to make the assignment one half p squared plus q squared as a mathematical expression for a Hamiltonian. I'm going to assign it when the metric reads dp squared plus dq squared, then the physical interpretation I will give to that original quantity over here, physical meaning,
is as a harmonic oscillator. I can make coordinate transformations. We have the formula still on the board, how to go from one pair of canonical coordinates to another pair of canonical coordinates. I'm going to make a canonical transformation in which my Hamiltonian reads P bar. In particular, this function equals P bar. Without knowledge of what was going on, that you had made a coordinate transformation, I would not know that that was still the harmonic oscillator. But at the same time that you changed your canonical coordinates, you kindly secretly changed the coordinates of my metric in my pocket. I take it out, and I find the metric now reads dp bar squared over 2 p bar plus 2 p bar times 2 q bar squared. It is not in Cartesian form. In order for me to determine the physical meaning of your symbol p bar, I look at my metric, see that it is not expressed in Cartesian coordinates. I mentally perform a quick calculation to bring it back into Cartesian coordinates. At the same time, I bring your expression back into those same coordinates, and I find that now your p bar, thanks to this form of the metric, is still corresponds to a harmonic oscillator. That's the functional form of a harmonic oscillator in these kind of coordinates. Of course, if I reach in my pocket and I find the functional form you've given me is indeed p bar, but my metric still says this Cartesian, then I must interpret what you have not as a harmonic oscillator, but as, I don't know what to call it, if it was p squared, p bar squared, I could call it a free particle, but I'm going to call this a momentum frame. I don't know what else to call it, okay? It's something, we don't have a name for it, whose Hamiltonian is strictly p. Okay, gentlemen, this is an important concept, and I'm begging you to tell me that you have understood this. To use the symplectic form along the way, that would not have helped, because in these coordinates, would always have been form invariant. I need something which is not form invariant, something which carries a trace of the fact that you have indeed gone from some special set of coordinates to something else. Okay, all of that is in classical mechanics. And I tell you that when somebody gives you a problem in classical mechanics, this is my Hamiltonian, you better ask him, what are your coordinates? That's the only way you're going to have a clue as to what physical problem you are talking about.
How did that help you when you did this? How did you know that it's still the same harmonic oscillator?
So the question is, how did I know this form of the metric over here worked? Well, because I did the homework on the side. So let's see what kind of homework is needed. I wanted p bar equal to, let me do it the other way around. So p is equal to square root 2 p bar times cosine q bar. Q is equal to square root 2 p bar sine q bar. That's my choice of canonical coordinate. I can solve it the other way around. P bar, I just square these and sum it. That's 1 half p squared plus q squared. Q bar is arctangent minus 1 of q bar over q over p. How do I know it's a canonical transformation? I have to form dp dq and convince myself that that is equal to a dp dq bar. Well, there is a Jacobian
that comes along with that transformation. What is that Jacobian? That Jacobian is d, which form do we like? Let's do this one. dp, dp bar, dq, dq bar, dp, dq bar, dq, dp bar. So dp, dp bar is 1 over square root 2 p bar times cosine. dp, dq bar, dp, dq bar gives me a square root 2 p to the minus times a sine. dq, dp bar, dq, dp bar gives me a 1 over 2 p bar times a sine. dq, dq bar gives me a square root of 2 p bar times a cosine. And you can see that that determinant is unity. So I have done my homework to prepare you for that.
Okay, that concludes today's lecture.